and your time is almost up. Jared watched the emotions play the hierarch's face and body, strange because of their alien nature, but no less powerful for that. It was a quiet and heart-rending struggle. Jared was reminded that at the briefing for the mission, Sagan said that humans couldn't break the Inishans militarily. They had to break them psychologically. Jared watched as the hierarch bent and bent and bent and then broke.
"Tell me who I am to seize upon," the hierarch said.
"Hugh Gelm," Sagan said. The hierarch turned to look at Hugh Gelm, standing quietly in the background, and gave the Inishan equivalent of a bitter laugh.
"I am not surprised," she said.
"He is a good man," Sagan said, "and he will counsel you well."
"Try to console me again, human," the hierarch said, "and I will send us all into war."
"My apologies, hierarch," Sagan said. "Do we have an agreement?"
"Yes,"
the hierarch said, and began her keening again.
"Oh, God,"
she cried.
"Oh, Viut! Oh, God!"
"You know what you have to do," Sagan said.
"I can't! I can't!"
the hierarch cried. At the sound of the cries, Viut Ser, who had been silent, stirred and cried for her mother. The hierarch broke anew. "You have to," Sagan said.
"Please,"
the most powerful creature on the planet begged.
"I can't. Please, please, human, please help me."
"Dirac," Sagan said, "do it." Jared unsheathed his combat knife and approached the thing that Sarah Pauling had died for. She was strapped to a gurney, and she wriggled and cried for her mother, and she would die alone and frightened and far away from anyone that ever loved her. Jared broke too. He did not know why. Jane Sagan walked over to Jared and took his knife and raised it. Jared turned away. The crying stopped.
Chapter 8. It was the black jelly beans that did it. Jared saw them as he was browsing at a Phoenix Station commissary candy stand and passed them over, more interested in the chocolates. But his eye kept going back to them, a small container segregated out from the rest of the jelly beans, which were in a mixed assortment. "Why do you do that?" Jared asked the vendor, after his eyes tracked back to the black jelly beans for the fifth time. "What makes the black jelly beans so special?"
"People either love them or hate them," the vendor said. "The people who hate them, that's most people. Don't like having to pick them out of the rest of the jelly beans. The people who love them like to have their own little bag of them. So I keep some on hand, but in their own space."
"Which sort are you?" Jared asked.
"I can't stand them," the vendor said. "But my husband can't get enough, and he'll breathe on me while he's eating them just to annoy me. I kicked him right off the bed once for doing that. You've never had a black jelly bean?"
"No," Jared said. His mouth was watering slightly. "But I think I'll try some."
"Brave man," the vendor said, and filled a small, clear plastic bag with the candies to hand to Jared.
Jared took it and fished out two jelly beans while the vendor rang up the order. Being in the CDF, Jared didn't pay for the jelly beans. They, like everything else, were gratis on what CDF soldiers lovingly refer to as their all-inclusive package tour of hell. But vendors kept track of what they sold to soldiers and billed the CDF accordingly. Capitalism had made it to space and was doing reasonably well. Jared took the pair of jelly beans and popped them into his mouth, crushed them with his molars, and then held them there as his saliva suffused the licorice flavor over his tongue, vapors of its scent moving beyond his palate and expanding in his sinus cavity. His eyes closed, and he realized that they were just as he remembered. He took a handful and crammed them into his mouth.
"How are they?" the vendor said, watching the enthusiastic consumption.
"They're good,"
Jared said, between jelly beans.
"Really good." "I'll tell my husband there's another on his team," the vendor said.
Jared nodded. Two, he said. My little girl loves them, too.
Even better, the vendor said.
But by this time, Jared had stepped away, lost in thought, heading back toward his office. Jared took 10 steps, completely swallowed the mass of jelly beans in his mouth, reached to get more, and stopped. My little girl, he thought, and was hit with a thick knot of grief and memory that made him convulse, gag, and vomit his jelly beans on the level walkway. As he coughed the last fragment of the candies from his throat, a name formed in his head. Zoe, Jared thought. My daughter. My daughter who is dead. A hand touched his shoulder. Jared recoiled, almost slipping on the vomit as he twisted away, bag of jelly beans flying from his hand. He looked at the woman who had touched him, a CDF soldier of some sort. She looked at him strangely, and then there was a short, sharp buzz in his head, like a human voice accelerated to 10 times speed. It happened again, and once more, like 2 slaps on the inside of his head.
What?
Jared yelled at the woman.
Dirac, she said. Calm down. Tell me what's wrong.
Jared felt disoriented fear and quickly stepped away from the soldier, clipping other pedestrians as he heaved away. Jane Sagan watched Dirac stumble away, and then looked down at the dark splash of vomit and the splay of jelly beans on the floor. She looked back toward the candy stand and stalked over.
You, she said, pointing to the vendor. Tell me what happened.
Well, a guy came over and bought some black jelly beans, the vendor said. Said he loved them and shoved a bunch into his mouth. Then he takes a couple of steps and throws up.
That's it, Sagan said.
That's it, the vendor said. I made small talk about how my husband likes black jelly beans. He said his kid likes them, too. He took the jelly beans and he walked off.
He talked about his kid, Sagan said.
Yeah, the vendor said. He said he had a little girl.
Sagan looked down the walkway. There was no sign of Dirac. She started running in the direction she last saw him going, and tried to open a channel to General Szilard. Jared reached a station lift as others were exiting, jabbed the button for his lab's level, and suddenly realized his arm was green. He retracted it with such violence that it smacked hard against the lift wall, bringing into sharp, painful focus that it was, in fact, his arm, and that he wasn't going to get away from it. The other people in the lift looked at him strangely, and in one case, with actual venom, he'd almost hit a woman when he drew back his arm.
Sorry, he said.
The woman snorted and performed the forward-looking elevator stare. Jared did the same and saw a smeary reflection of his green self in the brushed metal walls of the lift. Jared's confused anxiety by this point was peaking toward terror, but one thing he did know was that he didn't want to lose his shit in an elevator filled with strangers. Social conditioning was, for the moment, stronger than panic over a confused identity. If Jared were to have taken a moment to question who he was, standing there silently in the lift and waiting for his level, he would have come to the startled realization that he wasn't exactly sure. But he hadn't. On a day-to-day basis, people don't question their identity. Jared knew that being green wasn't right. His lab was 3 levels down from where he was, and that his daughter Zoe was dead. The lift reached Jared's level. He stepped out to a wide hallway. This level of Phoenix Station had no candy stands or commissaries. It was one of the 2 levels of the station given over primarily to military research. CDF soldiers stood every 100 feet or so, monitoring hallways that led deeper into the level. Each hallway was fronted by biometric and BrainPal brain prosthesis scanners that scanned every individual who approached. If that person was not allowed down the hallway, the CDF guard would intercept them before they made it to the hallway itself. Jared knew that he was supposed to have access to most of these hallways, but doubted that this strange body would have clearance for any of them. He set down the hall, walking as if he had a purpose, toward the hallway he knew held his lab and his office. Maybe by the time he got there, he'd figure out what to do next. He was almost there when he saw every CDF guard in front of him in the hallway turn and look at him. Crap, Jared thought. His hallway was less than 50 feet away. On impulse, he sprinted toward it and was surprised at how fast his body took off toward his goal. So was the soldier guarding it. He whipped up his MP, but by the time it was up, Jared was on him. Jared shoved the soldier hard. The soldier bounced off the hallway wall and fell. Jared sprinted past him without breaking a stride and ran to his lab door 200 feet down the corridor. As Jared ran, sirens blared and emergency doors slammed shut. Jared barely passed the threshold of the one that would have separated him from his goal when it shot out from the corridor sides, sealing the section in less than half a second. Jared reached the door to his lab and thrust it open. Inside were a CDF military research technician and an array. Jared was struck immobile by the cognitive dissonance of having an array in his lab, and through the confusion came a knife-like frisson of fear. Not of the array, but from having been caught doing something dangerous and terrible and punishable. Jared's brain surged, looking for a memory or explanation to attach to the fear, but arrived at nothing. The array wiggled its head and came around the desk at which it had been standing, and moved toward Jared.
"You're him, aren't you?"
the array said, in strangely pronounced but recognizable English.
"Who?"
Jared asked.
"The soldier they made to trap a traitor," the array said. "But they couldn't do it."
"I don't understand you," Jared said. "This is my lab. Who are you?" The array wiggled its head again.
"Or maybe they did, after all,"
the array said. It pointed to itself.
"Kynan, scientist and prisoner. Now you know who I am. Do you know who you are?"
Jared opened his mouth to answer and realized he did not know who he was. He stood there, dumb and open-mouthed, until the emergency doors flew open a few seconds later. The woman soldier he had talked to earlier stepped through, raised a pistol, and shot him in the head.
"First question," General Szilard said. Jared lay in the Phoenix Station infirmary, recovering from his stun bolt, with two CDF guards stationed at the foot of his bed, and Jane Sagan standing by the wall.
"Who are you?"
"I am Private Jared Darak," Jared said.
He did not ask who Szilard was. His brain pal ID'd him as he entered the room. Szilard's own brain pal could have easily ID'd Jared, so the question wasn't a matter of mere identification.
"I'm stationed on the kite. My commanding officer is Lieutenant Sagan, who is over there."
"Second question," General Szilard said. "Do you know who Charles Boutin is?"
"No, sir," Jared said. "Should I?"
"Possibly," Szilard said. "It was his lab we found you standing in front of. It was his lab that you told that array was yours, which suggests that you thought you were Charles Boutin, at least for a minute. And Lieutenant Sagan tells me that you wouldn't respond to your name when she tried to talk to you."
"I remember not knowing that I was me," Jared said. "But I don't remember thinking I was anyone else."
"But you got to Boutin's lab without ever having been there before," Szilard said. "And we know you didn't access your brain pal for a station map in order to find it."
"I can't explain it," Jared said. "The memory of it was just in my head."
Jared saw Szilard glance over at Sagan at that. The door opened and two men walked through. One of the men stalked over to Jared before his brain pal could identify him.
"Do you know who I am?"
he said. Jared's punch sent the man to the floor. The guards raised their MPs. Jared, already coming down from his sudden surge of rage and adrenaline, immediately put his hands up. The man stood up as Jared's brain pal finally identified him as General Greg Mattson, head of military research.
"Well, that answers that,"
Mattson said, holding his hand to his right eye. He stalked off toward the room's lavatory to check out the damage.
"Don't be so sure," Szilard said.
He turned to Jared.
"Private, do you know the man you just struck?"
"I know now he's General Mattson," Jared said.
but I didn't know that when I struck him.
Why did you strike him? Zillard asked.
I don't know, sir, Jared said. It just...